Welcome, everyone, to the Sacred Body Podcast. It's been a very, very long time since I've recorded an episode. And this reignition of the podcast feels really special because there's a lot of integrated wisdom from the last year, as well as someone who's been a part of my life for a couple of years now. And we have. We have been holding the intention of this conversation to take place for quite a while, and it feels like maybe an auspicious start to this next sequence of conversations. My guest is Kate Powell. Kate is an intuitive and wisdom embodiment guide. Kate supports change makers like solopreneurs, executives, healers, and parents who are navigating big questions and life changes and want to unlock new levels in the game of spiritual beings evolving through their human experience. With a background in movement, mindfulness, and intuitive energetic healing modalities, Kate is known for helping her clients deepen into the truth, heart, and essential wholeness of who they are, whether through moments of great joy or when they need their feet held to the fire of their own journey. That's my favorite part of your bio, Kate. Kate, welcome. I'm so glad to have you here. And I am fascinated by your work because I think that it's the kind of work that is difficult to put words to. And it's so palpable in your presence. Like, I get what you do being in your presence. And I'm curious how that, like, and because I know this has been part of your process, but like, how have you sort of engaged that challenge of bringing this deep earthen body spirit knowing to the world as an offering? How did this coalesce?
It's funny. I've been doing sort of a exploration of human design recently, and my lines in human design are 1-3, which is like the person who has to do all the research, but then also has to do the like the fuck around, find out kind of thing. So like, and you have to try trial and error and like, you know, success and failure. And then like from that, it becomes this just like embodied wisdom that then gets shared, and that the value and the gift and the guidance really comes from like walking the journey myself first. And so it's been really interesting reading that recently and having that mirrored back to me, because I feel like, yeah, I mean, it's funny, you know, I struggle a lot of times because in marketing, we're supposed to talk about like, oh, our journey, right? And our the hero journey is like the archetype or whatever, right? And yeah, and it's like this is like a it's a bone deep thing that I can't even necessarily point to a specific moment in time and say like this is when this started or like this is when I knew what this was, because it just feels like this is who I am more than like even just a moment in time or a specific response to some kind of instance or some sort of specific circumstance or moment in time. I will say, I mean, I struggled a lot when I was younger. I think I've always been a very sensitive person. High sensitive, intuitive. And so a big part of my journey was, I think, trying to fit into the over culture, which is not super supportive of those things and certainly doesn't give us the tools to navigate those in a skillful and like integrated kind of way. Or it doesn't yet, right? This is the hope. This is, I think, part of why we do what we do. And so, you know, and even a culture of of disembodiment too. Like that is so much of our overculture is disembodiment. And so for a big part of my journey, it was actually getting lost from what I think my innateness is, which is embodiment and sensitivity. And as I get disconnected from that, then really it's just been moments of like hitting all-time low in terms of some of my depression and my relationship with my body. I've had disordered movement and eating patterns at different points in my younger life, periods of sort of minor, but you know, self-harm. So there's definitely been, I internalized a lot of, I think, the battle in many ways that I see in our culture between who we are as humans and as spirits having a human experience, as animals that are also like holy, not that other animals aren't holy, right? But as sort of that bridge of like the holiness and the animalness. And there's really a battle, I think, between that and the culture that we currently live in. And what's considered normal in the culture that we currently live in. And I really internalized that battle and was like playing that out in and on myself in a lot of ways. And so I would reach certain points where just, I don't know, some deep wisdom within me that I can't claim as my own, but is also my own, like, you know, would come through and be like, something has to change. And somehow I'd end up guided. And first it started with yoga, and kind of getting back in my body. And then there was a period where it brought me to farming and actually working on small scale chemical free farms and getting into different relationship with land and food and my body and seasonality and cycles. And that was really powerful moment for me. And then it brought me to the energetic healing and more of these kind of deeper indigenous wisdom traditions that, you know, I think offer us a remembering of some older ways of connecting and relating. And so then it's just kind of from there, it's been like, I've seen how much it's shifted things for me and how much, I don't love the word healing because I think there's a lot of baggage around that word now. But healing in many ways and sort of, again, I like the word wholeness because I think it's that, it's less about some state. I think sometimes we hear the word heal and we think there's like some point we're trying to achieve. Whereas wholeness to me feels like it's just a constantly coming back to center and being like, okay, what are the different parts of me right now? And how can I bring them into integration and keep integrating? And then from there, keep evolving. And so, yeah, I've seen how much, like, I feel like I've found a deeper wholeness and evolution than older versions of me had even known was possible. And then from there, it's like, well, I want everybody to have this. and it's our birthright to have this, you know, and I believe that with like every fiber of my being. And it's the revolution that we need actually in the world right now. Like when we look at the world and we see all the things that are hurting and all the things that are challenging and all the things that are scary, and, you know, and all the ways that the systems that we're living within and under and, you know, perpetuating and upholding, like all the ways those are hurting, you know, ourselves and each other. You know, I just feel like for me, I look around at the world and I'm like, but the things I've learned, like that's such a part of what I know the antidote is, you know? And so I think in a not brief description, that's probably my journey of like how I kind of got to the offerings that I offer.
Yeah, there's so much resonance in your journey for me. And I really appreciated that specific articulation of the way the overculture was playing out inside of you as a battle. And you were able to respond to that, or some part of you was loud enough to create a pause, which enabled a shift or a change of behavior, saying, this isn't right. I do think that most people have access to that sense of this is not right, but we, you know, we don't necessarily recognize the chronic illness or this mysterious illness that came out of nowhere, or this nagging pain that just won't go away no matter what we try. And it's a curious thing to consider what it is that, well, and you and I have both studied the Vedic sciences, so there is an answer in most philosophies, most earth-based philosophies, but like, what is it that keeps us deaf to, blind to, numb to that wisdom channel running through the center of us that just says, stop, something's got to give. And how do we cultivate that, foster that sensitivity? And some of it too, you know, as I heard you describing yourself, highly intuitive, highly sensitive, in our culture, those are liabilities. So is it sort of a hypothetical question, but also a direct one, is it fear of being rejected from our communities, our families, that keeps us from acknowledging that something needs to give? Or I'm so curious your musings on that, your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I love that question because I do. I think you're right. You know, I think everybody has some sense of something being wrong. And, you know, and I think for whatever reason, some of us seem to feel that magnetic pull towards the answer. And some people seem to just feel like, I know something's wrong, but I don't know even where to go to start to find the answers, you know. And, you know, and I do, I mean, I think some of it is, I mean, I think you're right. I think some of it is a fear of rejection. Absolutely. I mean, it does feel like it can feel very scary and like there's a lot to lose. I think we also can get caught in these like feedback loops almost too, where there's a period. I mean, I remember when I was going through my energetic, the training I went through was officially called integrative energetic medicine and coaching. And when I was going through that training, you know, part of what I really appreciate about that process was it was actually a 2 to 3 year training. So in the first year entirely was just working on ourselves so that we had a felt sense of what was possible with this work in our own bodies and to kind of clear us to become, to be better at listening to that intuitive energy. Because, you know, I think a lot of times, so many of the trainings that we have right now in our culture are sort of that capitalistic based consumerism, like fast paced, immediate satisfaction, you know, rather than sort of these longer apprenticeship models. And so we come in and we learn the philosophy and we learn, you know, we may learn some protocols, right? And we have some ahas. And then, you know, in a couple weeks or a month or like a weekend or, you know, 2 months, it's kind of like, okay, great. Now go out into the world. And then, you know, we want to share what we found and what's amazing and what's worked for us. And, you know, and I think with some of that, what happens is we haven't cultivated that, the depth of listening that we actually need to really be a channel. And then what starts to happen is like, we're just open enough to be sensing stuff, but we're not solid enough in our foundations around it, or solid enough in our boundaries around it, or haven't really processed through some of that fear of rejection and our internalized fear of our own sensitivity and the power that actually comes with that. And then from there, it's like, that stuff starts to get in the way then of what it is we're trying to hear or what it is we're actually accessing, that wisdom, that higher wisdom and that earth-based wisdom, right? Both and. and when our programming or our conditioning starts to like come into play, then that can start to distort how we're actually hearing the messages, which then can start to give us like get us caught in this feedback loop of it feeling inaccurate or unsafe or crazy or like all the other ways that it's been pathologized, like in our overculture. And you know, and then too, if we don't have the right boundaries around it, we may be sort of reaching out to people who aren't ready for it, or we may be trying to share it with people, you know. And then it just kind of, we start to get this mirroring that isn't actually helpful. And I think that that's like a big, I think that's something that I think is like a big obstacle for people is like knowing once they start to have those awakenings, where do you actually go to get healthy mirroring so that you're actually getting reinforced? You're having your new skills you're developing reinforced in healthy and productive and supportive ways. And I don't mean productive in like a consumerist like kind of way.
No, effective.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so I think that that's a piece of things is like having the right relationships and the right places where we can get that mirroring. I think doing a lot of that inner work to kind of unlearn our internalized overculture, like ways of approaching. But I think a lot of it really is like presence and listening. I mean, that's so much of it. And we're not actually taught either of those skills in our culture.
Something that comes up for me as I'm listening to you is like this confusion about where to go when we have this sense that something's not right. I see this like, and this is a complicated conversation, but one I'm excited to have with you. This deep inner knowing about, you know, the initial voice maybe being something's not right, but without a cultural context about how to dig deeper, do the processing work, or trust that we have a unique and sacred journey in this life, we turn towards quote unquote causes and get swept away into sort of treadmill-like fights and stances and positions and that aren't necessarily ever addressing the deep core need of like our spiritual wounding, right? We're continuing to fixate on no doubt significant issues in our culture, but never quite getting to the root of those problems. Mm-hmm. And like just treading water for decades until it's just like, ah, you know, never getting deeper into, I've been appreciating one of my teachers, whenever we have one of these like, you know, big surges of cultural, political anxiety, she writes these epic newsletters reminding each of us, like, you have a role that's specific and isn't necessarily like your neighbor's role. Like, how are you serving this cause at a deep level? It doesn't mean you need to go to every fucking protest and sign every fucking petition and do this and watch every news cycle and fixate and churn and wear yourself out. Like, drop in. And even that kind of like pretty gentle reminder has been so significant for me and has brought a lot of awareness about how much of, dare I say, my life force has been wasted. Like, how do I complete that thought? Just fighting for things that aren't actually the fight. Mm. You know, like we spend a lot of time even talking about fighting against and don't have a lot of practice cultivating, generating, regenerating. And I know regeneration is a big part of your passion too. So I wonder what your thoughts are on like this sacred path getting confused with like a quote unquote cause. Not that there aren't important causes, but I think you understand my meaning here.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. So I mean, I think a huge part of that is actually like, you know, what I think is sort of being commonly called as like the village wound, you know, and sort of this, that we don't actually, and by we, I mean the overculture here in the United States. I can't speak for everywhere, although I think at this point in the world in general, this is true, but there are certainly places in the world and pockets of communities that are still living in much more sort of earth-based wisdom ways. So I'm obviously not necessarily speaking in a universal sense here, but you know, we don't have an embodied sense of safety and trust in general. We don't have an embodied sense of safety and trust around uniqueness and belonging anymore. And, you know, some of that I think is like sort of our meaning on the nuclear family. You know, I think some of that is, there's a lot of like complex layers of like social and economic and racial and all kinds of other like systems that kind of feed into that. But, you know, so I think it's, yeah, I think it's multi-part, right? I think part of it is like that we don't trust that we can be whole and ourselves and also be in true belonging, unconditional belonging with others. And if we don't trust that, then we're always going to feel like in order to belong, and we're wired for that, in order to belong, we have to abandon some part of ourselves, and probably the most unique and actually then the most powerful part of ourselves. So, I mean, I think that that's a piece of it for sure. And I think that also connects back to, though, to like that we've actually lost communal collective ritual around grief, death, life, birth, right? And those aren't unconnected from sort of this like quote unquote village wound, but they're also, but it's like sort of another piece of it and another layer of it, I think. And with the, you know, I think so much actually goes back to this fear of death, because we can't go inside and look at what we're feeling if we're afraid of death.
Yeah, if we don't trust life, if we don't trust our body, we have to find something outside of us to trust and hold and carry us. And, so like, what a great way to extract power from the people, make them mistrustful of their very life.
Yeah.
What is like running so vibrantly through them, as you said, their birthright. It's
and the same way that being afraid of life, right? If we're afraid, you know, so many times, like, we don't want to look inside because we're like, there's some part of us that knows that there's just like this immense ocean of grief, or just this like immense, just wildfire of rage, right? And like just these enormous, or at least initially, we feel like they're going to be enormous feelings, right?
Yes.
And all consuming. And there's a part of us that's afraid that like, if I begin to tap into that, it will consume me and I will die and I will never come out the other side, right? And so that right there is a fear of death. And again, part of that too is like in this individualistic society, like, yes, those things are too fucking big for any one person to actually hold. You know, and that's just the truth of it, partly because those feelings, when they're that big, what we're tapping into is actually collective feeling, not individual feeling. And that's one of the ways that I think I'm a firm believer in one-on-one sessions, and I offer those, and they're powerful and profound, you know, but I also believe we need more group healing spaces and collective and communal healing spaces, because, and I'm seeing that more and more with my clients now, right? Like, they come, so many of them have been with me for years. And when they first started, we were working through a lot of personal and individual stuff. And they've been with me for long enough now that what they're bringing to the sessions, I have to keep reminding them. I'm like, this isn't just yours. Like, this is all of ours. And we actually need group containers in order to hold this and process through this. Because yes, if we feel it in our bodies, it's ours, or we have a certain level of responsibility for it. And also, it's not only ours to hold, you know, I mean, and so when we don't have communal ceremony space, right, and we don't have communal practices of rupture and repair that naturally happen in moments where as a collective, we need to mourn. As a collective, we need to celebrate. As a collective, we need to repair. As a collective, we need to like whatever. You know, when we don't have those spaces, then we're like left feeling like it's all on us. And then that, again, here's that feedback loop. It just ends up reinforcing this idea of like, whoa, don't touch that. Like, that's way too big. you know, and we're going to get consumed by it and it's going to like kill us and like, you know, whatever. Right. And so then we just keep running and looking outside and trying to latch onto these other things. And then we stay disconnected from, yeah, like you said, our own power, which is both unique to us and also our own power as like human beings, like together.
You alluded to it earlier, like there's a deep source of power that runs through us. I don't own this power in the sense that like it's finite to me. And the embodiment work that you allude to and work with and embody is that like structural stability that can withstand the force of this power running through you like a charge.
Yeah.
And also discharge, like in excess. There was something, oh my goodness, when you were speaking to the collective rupture and repair process, one of the other outcomes of that that came to mind is, you know, what we see just in excess, primarily in the US and also other places, but this sense of like, well, that's not my problem. That doesn't affect me. That's not mine. Strangles all of us, but in particular, you know, those who carry a high emotional burden, those with vision, those with high sensitivity, those who have been oppressed, those who have been victimized, those who, need more tending to, like children, you know, they tend to bear the brunt of this hyper-individualization because there's this strange sense, you know, that I notice in regards to children. It's like this pretty even split where there's this cohort on one side that's almost like a little overly, and this is, if I'm honest, like my judgment language. So I'm not speaking facts here. I'm just naming an observation. But over here, there's a little bit like, oh, like I won't let my child into the world at all. Like this hyper containment. And then over here, this like, your kid should be able to soothe themselves at 6 months and like, blah, blah. And then it goes on from there. Like, what is wrong with you having needs, baby? Mm-hmm. Going into this other, just more complicated realm. So very evocative. And I'd like to give you the opportunity also to speak to some specifics about your work, because you offer a lot of group containers and, correct me if I'm wrong, but offer, essentially an attunement, like an attunement, which I understand as deepening presence to what is, the energies that are available. And it's holding that tension between the energies like rage and grief and what else is available within that, in that space. So I'd love to hear a little bit of the specifics about how you work with group containers and support folks in attuning.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny. It's even just what you were just saying about the sort of that toggling back and forth, like as parents, you know, between like complete protection and like complete abandonment, kind of like the oppression and the abandonment, right? I mean, I think that speaks so much to kind of the extremes of our nervous system that we sort of find ourselves in, and that, and also again to sort of that extremity that I think happens when we're disconnected from inner trust, basically, and we're sort of having to source what's true from the outside. So anyway, just yeah, kind of quickly to respond to that. But yeah, I love your definition of attunement. You know, for me, I think with attunement is always happening, because energy, you know, is really what we are, and it's what the universe is, and it's what life is. And I think that kind of connects back a little bit too to what you were talking about with sort of some of that hyper individualism and how that actually ripples out and affects everybody. You know, and I think that that's, for me, that's been a huge piece. You know, I would say the difference between like the healing and you know, wholeness that my yoga practice first started me on. Obviously, yoga as an ancient wisdom tradition has subtle body literacy and has a sense of energy kind of woven into it. But the way it is frequently taught and practiced and in the US, that it does not always come through and translate in the same way. So for me, it was, you know, it was happening because breath work and movements like taps into energy, but I wasn't really aware of and understanding those subtler layers of what was kind of going on there. And it was when I got into really more of my energy healing training and more of that energy, integrative energetic medicine piece, and started really learning about the subtle body and energy, that things profoundly started to shift for me even deeper than they did in the yoga practice. And I would say some of the big difference in that is that at least where I was at that point in my journey and what I took from the trainings that I had, right, with the yoga practice, was that it was still about my teachers. I'm really grateful. My teachers were amazing and really highlighted presence as like the cornerstone. My teacher, who actually just passed away in November, so would always say, who you are when you teach is what you're teaching. And so beyond the asana, beyond anything else you say or do, who you are when you teach is what you're teaching. And so that really like stuck with me. And so I've held on to that, like both on my mat and off my mat, right? And but you know, it's even with that, it still felt sort of individual in a way, that it was all on me to kind of make sure I was holding that presence right. And, you know, and that I just had to hold the presence right and trust that that would ripple out, right? And it wasn't until I would say I really deepened into the energetic piece and the subtle body piece that I started to really understand that we are always attuning. And it's, the question becomes, what are we attuning to? And that's actually where our power lies, right? So we can attune to social media and the madness that seems to like be happening there. We can attune to the collective helpless grief, right, of like the news cycle whenever some tragedy happens. We can attune to a cause, you know, and the anger and the stance, right? We can attune to fear and sort of the defensive and sometimes then offensive postures of that, right? We can attune to like those things. We can attune to love. We can attune to love that's more like codependent or more fear-based. We can attune to love that's more spiritual. We can attune to something that manages to sort of balance and leave space for all of those things, right? And so I think that's really, for me, that's such an important piece of the attunement, is that like getting people to understand that like we are always, because we are energy and everything around us is energy, then when we start to like learn that and we start to understand that what our subtle body is, and we practice the presence and we practice the listening, and we actually start to become aware of all these different channels that sort of, and I mean channel almost like a radio channel as a metaphor, you know, that like expression and reception of information or of beingness is like always happening, right, on multiple levels. So there's like the conversation that you and I are having verbally right now, and then there's the conversation that we're having non-verbally, right? And that like encompasses like a whole big range of subtle things. And that's where we start to get into kind of where we started this conversation with sort of that, like the quieter pieces of things, those sort of quieter knowings that we're not always trained to listen into those. And so part of what I'm doing, whether it's in my group containers or my one-on-ones, is I'm helping people learn to trust that quieter voice and helping them learn to kind of just by holding that presence and that resonance of wholeness myself to the best of my ability at this moment in time, right? Knowing that that's like a constantly evolving practice for me even, but the more I can hold that, then I'm giving them something to attune to that isn't the sort of disordered or the perhaps not as healthy or perhaps, you know, not as conducive to wholeness kind of things that we're so used to attuning to because they're so much louder, because they're so much more dramatic, because there's so many more people attached onto them. And so they actually have this much larger magnetism, right? Because it's like energy builds. And so the more people that are feeding this one particular frequency, like the larger the cloud of it, if we want to call that, you know, and the more pull it can start to have. So, you know, whether it's in the group spaces or the one-on-ones, you know, I'm sort of holding this anchor, holding this presence that then allows people to start to, even on an unconscious or subconscious level, it often starts that way as at the beginning of people's sessions, you know, it's less conscious, but it's like, it provides an invitation for their bodies and their nervous systems to relax. And because that wholeness is our birthright, like we know it, we recognize it when it's there. And if we're willing to trust it, then we attune to it, you know, and it's like, and then it starts just like building a muscle. It starts to become more and more familiar again. And we start to find it easier and easier to find our way back there again when we get pulled off or, you know, pulled away from it.
I would love to hear your thoughts and experience with that, what I imagine is a fine line between the attunement to the collective and the support of that and the health of that and the need for that and that possibility of assuming energy that is not ours. That's that really fine line. And I don't know if I articulated it super clearly, but do you understand my
question? Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah, that was a huge piece for me actually in like my training, because just the way I am is part of what allows me to be so, I think, effective in my work and sensitive in my work is that I very easily and quickly attune to other people. So,
but I need a lot of support in that, but I definitely need more support in like the discernment and the boundary and the holding.
Yeah. And so that's where I think just the practice starts to come in. Like that first year I talked about in my integrative energetic medicine and coaching program, you know, it was like I had to learn what like my music note was, like, for, you know, kind of. And so it's like when you learn what your presence actually feels like, and you, and maybe it takes a really long time to start to get like, okay, this is what like my note is, right? Or my frequency, my like feeling tone. And once I get that, then it's like I can start to differentiate between myself and others. And so then I can feel the other stuff, but I like know I can find my way back to myself again, because I have a really felt sense of what, whom I am and what I feel like, right?
Beautiful.
Yeah. And so I think that that's like the biggest piece of that, you know, and then knowing how to also close that off sometimes. Like I don't go to Costco as open as I am when I'm in session with people. That's just not healthy or like normal, right? Like,
yeah. What an incredibly useful skill, and one that as a sensitive and empathic person, it took me a while to understand the usefulness of that, as opposed to feeling like I can't close myself off. And that's a lot of like the rhetoric out there in these, you know, causes where it's like, don't turn away. It can get confusing. I think there is a fine line, like, yeah, attune to the suffering of others, and that cannot be your entire experience of life, because you will not survive and there's nothing you can do from that place.
Right. I also think there's a big difference, and I have this conversation with clients sometimes, between attuning to and feeling in order to release, and attuning to then hold in our bodies, right? And so I think also the difference between feeling like we're a channel and feeling like we're a bowl, right? And so if we're a bowl and we're feeling everything, then it's just going to get stuck there. Yes. And that's like not helpful, right? And I even had to have that conversation with a client one time who, you know, was cycling through stuff. And I was like, okay, we've been doing this work for a while, and I'm not really seeing some of the progress that I think we should be seeing at this point, you know? And so let's like have a conversation about that and figure out what's actually going on, right? And like, because it's not serving you if we're just like cycling through again and again. And, you know, and I just like had this image come to me of this client as like a tea kettle that was like venting, you know, or a pressure pot, like, you know, a pressure cooker that was just like venting a little bit, rather than as sort of this like breathable membrane that was like allowing in and allowing out again. And so I think that that's also a really important piece for that as well, is like whether we think we're feeling things to hold them for people. And there's so much languaging around that right now, like holding you in love, holding you in this, like holding this for you, hold. And it's like, fuck that. Like, you know, like I am holding you in love, but like not because it's mine to hold, you know, I'm holding a container of love around you. And like, that's mine to offer, right? Because that is, that still allows that person their sovereignty, which is like that their journey is their journey. And I don't get to, no amount of how much I love somebody is like meant to actually alter or take their journey away from them. Then it's not actually love, right? And so when I hold people in love, it's like I'm anchoring a frequency, I'm attuning a container to love, right? And I'm not actually holding them in love. I'm giving them the space to like, to breathe and to go through whatever they're going through. And like, and I think that that's a really important distinction, and one that I think we miss, again, partly because of this disconnect from Earth, because this is a conversation I have to have with clients a lot too. I'm like, why are you holding this? Go out and like release it. The Earth is so much bigger than we are and can actually take so much more of those frequencies and wants to be in relationship with us, and relationship is give and take. And so like, there are days where I feel the Earth's grief about like what's happening with the climate and everything, right? And I like, I'll go out for my walk and all of a sudden I'll just be sobbing. And then I'm just like, you know, and, but the Earth is like relieved that I'm like crying for her, it's them, they, he, right? And then I'm like also able to, when I have feelings that are too big and I'm crying for humanities, then, you know, like pains and sufferings and wounds and all of that, I can go out and the Earth will take that. And it becomes this like beautiful, you know, and that's, I think, the importance of that wholeness piece too, right? Is we have spiritual energy and we have Earth energy and we need both of those things. And we are, I mean, that's where I think like, you know, I'm not an expert in Tantra, so I'm not like speaking for the tantric system, but different systems like that, that are focused on that idea of divine love and life force energy as pleasure, sensuality, sometimes even sexuality, right? Energy, but in a very like spiritual way. You know, it's like we are the meeting point, we are the channel, we are the conduit, we are literally like the, yeah, that point where these frequencies can start to meet. And part of that relationship is then like offering something back to those things. And yeah, when we understand that, it's like then we don't have to hold everything in our bodies, we can actually like let it go, because we're also supported by these larger frequencies that have more capacity than any one human can. And so, you know, whether it's in a group ritual ceremonial space or whether it's by ourselves, but like in connection with Earth and spirit, right? We have to like tap into sort of these larger containers, I think, that are holding us while we're holding whatever we're holding, so that then we can, yeah, let things go too.
Where I feel drawn to anchor this conversation is my kind of renewed understanding of the essential nature of our web, the web that we are a part of. It is no one being's responsibility to hold it all. Mm-hmm. We are an essential part of this earth ecosystem.
Yeah.
And recognizing that we have, it's like that double-edged sword of we are very small and mm-hmm. kind of insignificant and also essential. Like one thread goes out in a net or a sweater, you know what I mean? Like each of us is holding as much as we're supposed to hold. It's not everything. And a trust and reverence for every other living, breathing being on this planet, right? An essential prayer in the yoga system. May we just remember that and attune to that and find ways to support our deepening belief and trust in that. And that's what I hear you offering. You offer holding and support, reminding, like holding the memory of our wholeness.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm so grateful that we get to be in this conversation together and that now this ball is rolling. It's been a long time coming and I'm grateful for your patience and also thrilled to be in relationship with you, Kate. You offer something so beautiful. And I can speak from, you know, nearly 2 years of being in weekly, bi-weekly space with you. You're a trustworthy resource for folks. So would you like to tell people where they can find you?
Sure. Thank you. I'm just taking that in for a minute. Very beautiful validation and affirmation. I appreciate that. And just, yeah, thrilled to be here and to get to be in these conversations. You know, it's important that these conversations keep happening because I think you're right. It's so easy to take a stance against something and we have to like find ways to also create something. Like, you know, we see that in earth, right? That like bare earth, things always want to put weeds up, right? Yeah. The reason weeds grow is because bare earth is like, it's not good, right? It's like, so anyway, so as a metaphor, you know, I think while we're trying to sort of like tear things down, we have to also be at the same time building what's new. And, you know, and I do think these types of conversations are really important pieces of that. Of that process of having sort of these imaginal types of conversations that are both rememberings and also like hopefully maybe spark some ideas for ways forward and help people find ways forward. So I can be found, my business is Wild Sacred Journey. So online, www.wildsacredjourney.com. I'm on Instagram, although pretty rarely. that's Wild Sacred Journey _KP, my initials, Kate Powell. And then if more frequently, I think will be my email list. And if folks go to my website, they can sign up. There's a little button where people can sign up for the email list. So
I'll make sure those links are easily accessible in the notes for this episode. And I look forward to many more conversations.
Yeah, thank you. I do too.
Thank you, Kate.